B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
It is the 4 o'clock hour. We are heading into the top of the ninth. The Phillies season, as far as playoffs concerned, hanging by a thread. The drama to follow. Keep it right here on 97.5 The Fanatic. They're down 4-1 at top of the ninth. 4 o'clock hour brought to us by Landis Block, your one-stop shop. The creative jaw-dropping outdoor paradise online at LandisBC.com. We will have an obituary for the Phillies when this game ends at probably 4:15.
Did you write it?
No, the obituary will be welcoming mourners on the radio.
Oh, I thought you meant you wrote
the obituary. Well, people are invited to come to the wake, to come calling between the hours of 4:15 and 5:15.
That's nice.
Yes.
They can send their condolences.
It is nice, yes. Flowers will be sent here. White lilies. Right here at 975 The Fanatic. All right, let's go back to the phones. Doug on a cell. Doug, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Doug? Doug?
Hello?
Hello, Doug. Mike? What's up, Doug?
Yeah. Okay, it's Doc.
What's up, Doc? What's up, Doc? Did I just say that? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Every time.
What's up, Doc? Go ahead.
A couple of, you know, I usually like to give you a little geography lesson, but you covered it pretty well at Port Charlotte. My daughter actually lives there.
Oh, is that right?
It is very nice.
Yeah, it's beautiful. West coast of Florida, it's beautiful turf over there.
Yeah, been down there a few times. It's just too, I mean, if you go in January, February, it's all right.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, too hot for you? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, it sounds like you're coming around finally on Doug. Back in his first year, I called him Dougie Dunscap, and then, you know, I had to make a public apology after you won the Super Bowl and all that. But I believe, I have believed ever since Frank Wright left, that things just have been trending down and not looking good overall. And I think, you know, I think you're starting to see that.
Well, not after three games.
I never thought...
To be honest, I never thought he was the sharpest tool in the box. But, once you win a Super Bowl, you're having some kind of connect with the team and you have some kind of proficiency. So I can't, say that he's a bad coach. We'll see as time goes on. This team was supposed to be better than what they are. And he's got to be adaptable to when you're missing some players, you got to have a better game plan to move the football.
Exactly, and that's what I mean. It's either not running enough when it's needed to help protect Carson, or running the wrong guys, or running Foles to death in the first game, and then you know Howard doesn't get any touches after he has a couple of good ones. Yeah, it just makes no sense.
I hear you. Again, but I can't evaluate Doug right now with three guys out of their lineup.
Yeah,
three important guys out of their lineup. We lauded their weapons. Well, we can't laud their weapons now.
I know. But real quick on the Phillies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping they lose this game and all the rest of the games. Because the more losses, the more chance for a sweeping change.
You're probably right. If they finish double digits out, maybe owner reacts. I'm telling you, he's not going to fire McPhail. And McPhail and Klentak are kind of tied together. So the front office, in my opinion, is going to survive. The manager is the most likely change he'll make because that will be widely accepted by everybody. And he doesn't have to, completely upset the apple cart. That's where I think Middleton, the type of guy Middleton is. I don't think he's a blowout guy. But I think he will make a change. Cash in Mount Airy on 97.5 The Fanatic. Cash.
Hey, Mike, how you doing, man?
What's on, Cash? How you doing?
I'm all right. Listen, I got to disagree with you on Doug. I think Doug is one of the sharpest tools in the box. I just think he had a lot of injuries in the offensive side. I think that God is not the sharpest tool in the box is our defensive coordinator. You know, this guy had 10 guys on the field.
Yeah, that play was a disaster. Nobody really caught that until after the fact.
I mean, what is wrong? I was down there at the field. I mean, this guy has no clue on how to disguise blitzes. He has no clue if the front four is not getting there. You know, he's just lost. I mean, this guy.
Listen, he's been a successful defensive coordinator in this league. So I think you're, like, going way overboard. Now, the reason why, it's funny, because any defensive coordinator could look bad if his front four is not active, right? If you're not getting any sacks, is that your fault, or is that your player's fault?
But Mike, this is the thing. Generate sacks.
Well, he did blitz like crazy 2 games ago.
Yeah, but it's not good enough just to blitz, Mike. You know, the great Jim Johnson, he would disguise blitzes. He would send up Dawkins, then back Dawkins up, you know, and then send a corner. You know, he would disguise blitzes where the quarterbacks didn't know.
His blitzes were fairly successful against Atlanta. You have to admit they were successful against Atlanta, except for the one play which burned them.
That was against Atlanta. Now, once you get that on tape, you don't think other teams are going to watch that and say, okay, well, this is how this guy's blitzing. Now you have to revamp and you know, come up with another scheme. And he had the same blitzes. I watched the game, dude. He had the same blitzes he had against Atlanta.
Hold on a second. Detroit scored on a 100-yard kickoff return and 2 short fields after turnovers. Right? You do realize that, right?
They had guys running Scott Friedo.
It's not true they had guys running Scott Friedo. In the first part of that game, Darby was getting picked on.
Watch Thursday, Mike. I'm telling you, man. I think if we do win, it's not to be a shootout. I'm not confident in Jim Schwartz. I say we won a Super Bowl with him, but in that Super Bowl, Brady threw for a record of almost 600 yards, man.
All right, listen, there's a lot of people are Schwartz haters out there. I think it's low-hanging fruit.
I think it's getting to the point where it's unfair, Mike. Because like you just mentioned, they gave up 27, but the defense gave up 20. And like you said, 6 of those points were gift-wrapped by the short fields of 2 turnovers. Mm-hmm. And usually after a sudden change, as they call it, you want to hold them to 3. That's usually the rule. If you hold them to 3, that's a win.
Yeah.
They got 2 wins. They gave up 2 touchdowns.
The defense did, I got to be honest with you, they did give up a long drive touchdown.
Yes, right after Eagles scored a touchdown.
Eagles scored, so that wasn't good.
Right, what I mean is the panic about, oh, this is terrible. Mm-hmm. After Green Bay, fine. And I had the same fears as you have about the defensive line. But 3 games in, when you have a lot of guys who didn't play and coming back from surgery, that doesn't automatically mean they're going to be bad all year.
We can't draw conclusions about a team stinking or being decent after 3 games when the offense has been depleted. You can't. Now, if they're 1-3, everybody is healthy and they're 1-3, well, then you got problems. So we'll see what happens. If they're 1-3, they're 1-3. If they're 1-3, you're going to have to settle for a 10-6 year in the playoffs.
Go win on the road.
You're going to have to settle for it.
Go win on the road.
Exactly. Amir in Chester. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Amir.
What's up, Mike?
What's going on, Amir?
Listen, man, real quick, man. Why the Philly fans, sometimes we get real silly. Why we talk about Jordan Howard like Bo Jackson or Christian Okoye or something?
You're right. You're right. It is like they're overhyping Jordan.
Even when they talk about DeFilippo and the like, well, they wasn't there last year, and our quarterback was coming off of reconstructing knee surgery. Isn't that going to be a drop off?
Here's the way I look at it mostly. It's like, okay, I think Jordan Howard can serve a purpose. But if Jordan Howard was so good, like, why would the Bears just get rid of him? You know? I mean, you got to factor that in. Like, why did the Bears just discard him? Maybe they saw that he was slowing down.
I think he's okay, but he's just okay. I mean, like, it ain't. And we had Zeke back there at Gurley. They're like, oh, now Doug lunching. Now everybody lunching now. And I like Miles Sanders. I think he's going to be all right. Listen, Mike, I fool with you because you always say the eyes don't lie.
Yeah.
And you can see he's more explosive. All right, he got to drop. You can't drop the ball. You got to get the coach to trust you. But you can see that he's athletically better than Jordan Howard.
Yes.
Period. And I see that's why the coaches see that.
Yeah.
And listen here, Mike. I think Kyrie Rose went, because isn't it that hard to find five good receivers when it's a gazillion colleges? So I think, you know, it's like, the teams to get five, it ain't got to be superstars, but it's clearly like they jacked the game off last week. Like, Arcega Whiteside, he didn't want to catch that pass. He was scared
to
death.
No, he didn't. So,
him in the hand, be like, oh,
you know, here's the thing. I thought I'd seen enough of Mac Hollins. I was done with Mac Hollins. You know, the guys that are, like, nitpicky injuries that can't go on the field, I'm done with you. So I never thought much of him. And I always thought they overvalued his contribution. They did draft a guy that they evaluated as an NFL player. Remains to be seen whether J.J. Arcega Whiteside is an NFL player. All right, can we play taps? It's over. It's finished. It's over. The season
has died.
Come to a conclusion. As far as playoffs go, you can still go to Fan Appreciation Day against the Marlins.
What's
that? Fan Appreciation Day, the final homestand.
Oh, that's right.
Still, you know.
Tons of giveaways.
You can still have your fun at the Phil's game with the fanatic jumping around. And they'll give you some T-shirts. Pat you on the head as a good fan.
That's nice.
It's over, Johnny. The Nationals close it out, win 4-1. The magic number has been exhausted. The Phillies now cannot make the playoffs. And now it is just a matter of whether the manager survives. And if they finish close to 10 games out of that final wild card spot, there is no way that this owner can bring this guy back. And I don't think he will. All right. Let's go to Don in Quakertown. Don, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Don.
Hey, what's up, man?
What's up, Don?
A couple things. First, before I get to my Eagles point, the Deauville Inn in Jersey, they have got the most amazing crab soup recipe that you will ever taste. So if it's still around with the new owners and the same chef, try it. Okay. You just played a clip by Mike Groh where he mentioned seeing the ball through our hands. And that is the exact reason why Dallas missed that catch, because he was trying to twist around to catch that ball in an unnatural position. All he had to do was put his hands out, palms up, that ball would have landed right in his hands. I see this all the time anymore, and it drives me crazy. All these receivers, they all try to do that look through the hands thing. It's like there's other ways to catch the ball. Doesn't that drive you nuts?
I have no idea what you're even talking about.
Okay, Dallas got it.
Yeah.
He missed that pass in the end zone.
Yeah.
He reached up to try to grab that ball out of the air. He twisted himself around to try and do that look through his two thumbs and four fingers catch thing.
Well, what are you suggesting he should have done?
Stick your hands out, palms up, and let the ball land in your hands. I see this all the time in the NFL. I see it in college. I see it in the flag teams that I coach, and there's always coaches saying, catch it like this. No, there's more than one way to catch a ball. If he just stuck his hands out, he would have caught that ball. Brian Westbrook touched on it last night, and I was listening to him. I said, thank you. I've been screaming about that since he dropped that ball. That ball hit him on the back of his hands because he didn't try to catch it the right way. It's such a simple thing. Put your hands out, let the ball land in your hands.
I think you should offer your services to the NFL.
You should take the quantum leap up from flag football to the NFL. The same thing.
I think you can make that leap very easily.
Okay.
Yes.
The ball hit him in the back of his hand because he was trying to turn his hand.
Okay. All right. Maybe I'll look at the play differently, and that's what I say. Like, you got that kind of insight. All right. I will look at the play. Trying to catch the ball wrong. Maybe he's right. What do I know?
No.
What do you want from me?
Some days you're the windshield. Some days you're the fly.
Dogs looking another way. What do you want from me?
Sometimes you change.
Some days you're the windshield.
Sometimes guys change positions, and what happens is when they're readjusting their hands, sometimes the ball gets on them a little quicker.
It's all in real time with the defender on you, and you're trying to leap in time. It's not as simple as just turning your hands a certain way, in my opinion. That sounds like he's valid. Frank in Philly. Frank, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic.
What's up, Frank?
How you doing?
Now, my question to you about Doug Peterson. If Nelson Aguilar catches that ball on a landing, and these guys catch the ball on Sunday, Is Doug Peterson still a bad coach?
But they didn't.
No, those games are winnable, but our receivers dropped the ball. So how is Doug a bad coach?
Yeah, I don't look at it that way.
Why is that?
Because if you're depending on one play and going to blame one guy for dropping a ball, your game plan is not good enough anyway.
One play, it's been 13 drop passes in the past two games. Like, that's horrible.
I got it. I got it. But, again, you're counting on guys who are inferior players to make catches. And that's a faulty view that those guys are going to be as good as the guys you have as a starter. So you would have to adapt. The drops don't happen. Drops happen because guys are inferior.
Yeah, because the scale they can hit. Now, Jim Schwartz. Now, your line and your D-backs are only as good as your D-line. So if they're not getting pressure and Darby's getting twisted all the time, ain't that the D-line's fault?
Yes.
Because they can't guard the receiver.
Yeah, we already know that the defensive backs are just average. So to enhance their average ability, your defensive line has to be better.
Correct.
Yes.
So my thing is, I'm just tired of people blaming a coach. Players play, coaches coach, and that's how I feel. Like, these guys stink. And they're not being held accountable for their position, and it's always the coach.
Okay.
Bill Belichick has not one good receiver possible. Like, through his whole career, he has six rings because he knows how to coach. Players play into his system.
Yeah. So why wouldn't these backups be able to play? If Doug's system is so good, why wouldn't these backups be able to play in it?
No, they do, but they don't catch the ball.
Well, that's what Doug's so. So and here's the lesson. They don't catch the ball because they're not good enough to catch the ball. If they're not good enough to catch the ball, I got to do something else, like go more run-centric. That's a coaching controlled decision, right?
Yes.
Well, then that's what people are looking at. If he's not adaptable enough to that, then we doubt his ability as a coach. Vinny, Fort Dix, you're on 97.5 Fanatic. Vinny.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
What's up, Vin?
Hey, I couldn't agree with you more with the, you know, with the last caller. I think we do need to switch up the plays a little bit, right, to get the guys who are healthy the ball and, you know, not rely on those inferior players, as you're calling them. But I wanted to really talk about the defense, right? Not in panic mode. You know, we were in as bad as we played the first half, and Washington still won the game. The last two games could have won, even though as bad as we played, special teams, you know, offense wasn't clicking. But so I understand our D-line is banged up, and I understand our D-backs aren't that great. And if your D-line gets pressure, then your D-backs look stressed. They're not good enough to be getting burnt there. So I'm like, why not, you know, maybe bump them at the line to give the defensive line that split second longer to try to get to the quarterback instead of sitting back and playing the soft zone and giving up the six.
Yeah, but bumping them at the line means they'll get by you quickly if you're an inferior corner because you don't have the catch-up speed. And if a guy makes a move at the line and you bump him, he's still going to get by you, and you're going forward, and he's going the other way. So it's hard to catch up and get back into the play.
I mean, down in distance and things like that. But maybe play a little more, you know, press coverage, not eight yards off.
Everybody is saying the same thing about press coverage, and I get it. But if you are a coach and you don't believe in your guys in that kind of system, how can you do it?
Well, you're absolutely correct, but we can't even believe in the guys that we have now in the system that they're playing. So all I'm asking is just maybe they switch it up.
Well, maybe he will. I don't know. Listen, both coordinators, I think, have a duty to switch it up at this point.
Well, do we have an offensive coordinator, or is it Doug Peterson?
Well, it's Doug Peterson. Doug Peterson has to switch it up.
Yeah. No, I'm not in panic mode. Again, if you're looking at the three facets of the game, offense, defense, special teams, we haven't necessarily played well on any of them. Banged up, got it, you know.
Right.
On paper, when all our guys are healthy, yeah, we're 12-4, 13-3. The season is not over. We can start clicking, you know, get all the bugs out and the kinks out in the first quarter, right? Hopefully 2-2, 1-3 would be a little worse. And then, you know, just start doing what we do well. I don't think we found our identity on offense yet just because we haven't had the key personnel in. And then on defense, you know, hopefully some of these guys come back. You know, I'm not saying Jalen Mills is great or anything. he adds a little bit more to the back, and you know, maybe we get Jalen Ramsey.
So this is a lot of maybes to salvage this team. And the bottom line is, I think we can all agree, if they go 1-3, it is very plausible that the best they'll be able to do is 10-6. 610-632-0975. All right. A couple lines are open. It is Philly obituary time, if you care enough to speak on the Phillies, who just concluded game one, and it's over. They're eliminated from playoff contention. And right now, they stand 7 games out of that final wild card spot. And to me, they will finish worse than that. And so they could finish like 9 or 10 games out of that final wild card spot. There can't be a person in town who thinks at that, with that kind of record, that the manager should come back. But we'll see. 610-632-0975. We're back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show. The Fanatic.
It is 4:32. It is the Mike Missinelli Show. Get to Twitter poll in a second. Right now, we got to get some knowledge from the Philadelphia Eagles. From the great Ron Jaworski, who joins us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Jaws, a lot to talk about here. I don't know where to start.
Neither do I. I'm very frustrated, as I'm sure all Eagle fans are, and I'm sure that Eagles facility down there, the NovaCare Center, is pretty frustrated right now, too. This team has far too much talent and to be posting a 1-2 record. It's really that simple. Now they've got to, you know, that's the record. That's simple. But now, how do we solve it? Now it's some challenges.
All right, let's break it down. Let's first go offensively. There seem to be a lot of people that are suggesting they should do some more running and utilize Jordan Howard a lot more. Where do you come out on that?
I like balance, and I believe in balance, and I thought they were getting a little bit pass happy. You know, after a couple games this year, they're about 66% pass. I think they're kind of nice smooth pace is probably at 62% pass, and I think they got a little pass happy. And you know, Carson Wentz is a terrific passer off play action. Terrific. He has a great ability to snap his head around, regain his balance, locate people in the secondary. That is a tremendous attribute that he has. When he uses play action, Mike, he completes 80% of his passes. 80%. Straight drop back, he's at about 57%. So there's a huge difference there. So now if you're running the football well and setting up that play action pass game, you're going to get the big play. So I do believe they need to continue to pound the football. And I know you mentioned Jordan Howard. Mm-hmm. You know, I went through that tape, and he's leaving yards on the field. I mean, he is a grinder. He's a punishing runner, but he doesn't have that slashing cutback ability. When I look at that end zone shot, I see opportunities for him to find that cutback lane and know where there's some daylight. And he's not that kind of back. He will burrow down and grind some yards out. And I think that's why you're going to continue to see more of Sanders. Of course, he has to hold on to football.
All right, so why did they get Howard then? Like, what was the point? Because, I hear where you're going. Now, yeah. There are a couple theories on Howard. One is they see what you just said. Two is they think he's slowed down a bit. Three is they're not as versatile with him in there, and they can't run a back out of the backfield as a receiver. All those things. So why'd they get him?
Yeah, all those points are absolutely right. And, you know, he is who he is. And, you know, he is a solid running back. But it seems that, under Doug Peterson, there's always been that belief in, you know, hey, we're going to play 3 or 4 solid running backs. And, you know, I think Miles Sanders eventually will become the bell cow of the offense. He has incredible quickness. He does have good vision. He can catch the football. Now, hey, you can't put the ball on the ground. And then, you know, and actually I thought after he fumbled a couple times, he became a ball carrier rather than a runner, and there's a huge difference. You know, ball carriers, you know, they're just carrying the football, not wanting to lose it. Runners, they make people miss, and they're flashy. And I think Miles Sanders has to now realize that, hey, that ball security is important, or it's going to affect him mentally, how he runs the football. But, you know, this is a team that historically, Mike, has been running back by committee. Each guy has a certain attribute that New Stadium likes to rotate in there, and they set plays up for those guys. And, oh, by the way, the defense knows this as well. So when they see a certain package come in, they know what to expect.
So we're not going to really expect much more from Jordan Howard, is what you're saying.
No, I really don't. I think he is the back that he is. He was never a great back. He's a good, solid football player. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with that. There aren't many guys that are going to be, you know, doing the things that Saquon Barkley did in this league as a young man.
All right, the drops, the seven drops as a quarterback, and he's one who played the position and analyzes it intently. What do you do about that? I'm sure you've never seen seven drops before. So as a quarterback, how does Wentz handle something like that?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I honestly was trying to think about a game where there were so many drops at it that I actually played in, and then quite honestly, I couldn't remember. And I actually had five clean drops, and there were a couple that were contested. I guess you could throw into that seven drop category. But certainly as a quarterback, the one thing you can't do is say a thing. I'm telling you, you just can't say a thing. Those are your guys. You work with them all off season. You work through training camp. You work with them every day at practice. You know, hey, balls are going to be dropped. You're going to miss some guys. And it's just the nature of the business. You know, in fact, you become, you know, more positive when guys are dropping the football because you want to instill that confidence back into them. Hey, I played with great receivers, you know, here in Philadelphia, and Harold Carmichael and Mike Quick, guys that were, you know, were tremendous receivers. And, you know, they drop a ball every now and then. It's going to happen. I never said a word to them. You know, I missed wide open receivers at times. They didn't say anything to me. Everyone understands it. They get it. And you just got to work through it. And practice becomes much more critical and paramount as we move forward.
All right, so I look at these drops, and I see guys that drop. These are backup players that are dropping the football, except for Goddard. Now, guys that drop to me are have insecurities and confidence problems, and so that tells me they're not adequate enough replacements. Doesn't that mean you have to alter your game plan to feature something else at that point?
Yeah,
Plan B.
I think so. Yeah, I agree with you, and if probably there's one area that concerns just a little bit is, you know, Doug is a really good play caller. You know, I mean, he's aggressive, and historically we know, you know, what he will do. He's out of his rhythm right now. And as I watch the game, in the past, I know his personality and I know this town so well, I could almost, you know, call the plays with him and get an idea of what he's doing. And maybe some of it is, you know, a lot of injuries. You know, you get a Goddard down or you're too tight end formation. Or all of a sudden you're not using as much of that, and he loves that formation at 12 personnel, one running back, two tight ends. All of a sudden you got guys hurt, not playing well. All of a sudden, you know, you go to your heavy formation where you got six offensive linemen, and all of a sudden Jason Peters comes out, and you can't use that. And by the way, it was very effective in I think the second or third drive of the game. They marched down the field with the heavy personnel. So I think the injuries certainly impact the play calling, and it's always going to be I think he's trying to stay the same, but I think you have to alter. Maybe it'll change when Alshon comes back and Deshaun comes back and they get back into that rhythm of the pedal to the metal style offense. But I think he's trying to be aggressive with the same players that are backup players and not getting it done.
We're talking to Ron Jaworski. All right, let's move to the defense. See, I know the offense is going to get better because personnel is going to be added, right? The defense now, I'm looking at in conjunction with the cornerbacks who are, let's face it, they're kind of average. The defensive line is supposed to work in conjunction with that to make them look better. How am I supposed to believe, with no sacks in the first three games, how am I supposed to believe that this situation is going to get better, defensive line in conjunction with cornerbacks?
They're close. They're really close. That doesn't get you anything. I get it. I understand it. But I'm watching. I'm seeing, you know, Matthew Stafford just by a hair, just a split second away from getting sacked. He moves. You can do the same thing with Matt Ryan. You can do the same thing with Case Keenum. They're close. Hey, they're not getting them. I get it. I understand it. But if I saw a defensive line and a blitzing group that wasn't getting pressure, I would be concerned. But they are getting pressure. They're very close, and usually when you get that first one, all of a sudden everyone starts getting all jacked up and getting going. I think the sacks eventually will come, but I will be honest with you, Mike, like I always am. I don't think Fletcher Cox is right. I'm watching him play. You know, I'm seeing him getting knocked off the ball, you know, on the 1 yard touchdown run. I never see this guy on his back, you know, from a guard, you know, just coming on a down block and taking him out. And I'm seeing, you know, his talent not on display like I always did. And not that he's playing poorly. It's just, you know, he is such a great player. I always expect to put the tape on and see him dominate a football game, and he's not doing it right now. Actually, Brandon Graham is playing phenomenal football, in my opinion.
All right, so Fletcher Cox is a big worry then.
It is a big worry.
Is that the injury or is that age?
I don't know. You know, hey, the Father Time gets us all undefeated. You know, he's been a little banged up. That may be starting to take its toll on him. But usually, like I said, I can plug the tape in, man. I watch Fletcher Cox and I just get a glass of water and sit there and smile because this guy's just, you know, kicking butt, and it's not happening this year.
All right. They win Thursday?
Yeah, they're going to win Thursday. They're going to win Thursday.
You've got them optimistically predicting a win for the Eagles.
Absolutely, and I think they might win it going away.
Oh, my God. I didn't expect this.
You know, going away is 10 points.
All right. Well, listen, I hope you're right.
Hey.
That'll salvage the season if you're right.
Don't get all excited about that Packers 3-0 start.
Okay. Sounds all good. Right. Ronnie, we'll talk to you.
It'll be a great game, but I like our birds.
All right. We'll talk to you.
We'll talk, Mike.
All right. Ron Jaworski. How about that? Out of the blue. The hunch.
You see, you know, Trey Thomas said, to his point, he claims that there's a stat that says that both Barnett and Graham are top 10 in win percentage at the defensive line and that they're close and it's just a matter of time.
All right. Well, I hope they're right.
Now, maybe they're wrong.
I hope they're right.
But if that's true, then they would probably win the game because that means now they're getting pressure on Rodgers.
All right. 610-622-0975. A lot of show left. Sal Pal 515. Your calls after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show. The Fanatic.
It's 450. Mike Missinelli Show. I said Phillies are done. Interestingly enough, there's game two tonight, and Nola is scheduled to pitch game two. Now, one could look at this situation and go, Nola probably should have pitched game one if you're trying to salvage the season. He didn't do it. I don't know why he chose not to do it. But once they lost game one, and a playoffs no longer a possibility, the question then becomes, why would you throw Nola in game two? And why don't they just shut him down? He's already overstressed with innings as it is. So what's the need for him to pitch? No, yeah, but he's going to go against Scherzer tonight. So he's probably going to take a loss anyway. So I wonder if the final win total is what's important to Gabe at this point.
Funny you say that because it's Tuesday today, right?
Yes.
So that would mean that if he pitches today,
he would pitch the last game
Sunday. Yeah. So he's probably thinking those are two chances for two wins.
Yes.
But if you're thinking about the team, shouldn't he only pitch like Friday or Saturday one more time for the home fans and then shut it down? Shouldn't he not pitch now? I'm saying if it's about him, let the home crowd see him either Friday, Saturday, I guess Friday.
Yeah.
And then that's it.
Yeah, that's probably what would have been the move.
Right.
With one more start and extra rest for between the starts.
Right.
But, I mean, listen, who knows at this point? I'm sure Kevin will go, well, I owe it to my players to put the best lineup on the field. Probably said something like that after the game. Here's the thing. The Phillies, I don't think, beat Scherzer tonight. I don't think they beat Strasburg on Thursday. So they have a chance to get swept in this series, a five-game series, or they have a chance to win one game, and that game has to be delivered by Smiley, and they have to beat Aníbal Sanchez, which they can do. And they went 2-3 against the Marlins. That's a grand total of 82 wins, and they probably finish at least 8 games out of the final wild card spot. 82-80. or if they get swept, 500. 81-81 for a team that came into this year thinking they could get to the playoffs.
And that'll be fourth place. That will be fourth place.
It'll be fourth place, at least 8 games out of the final wild card spot. There is no way that the manager should come back. None.
You're right, but then if, okay, GM's back.
Yeah.
Manager gone. Are there other collateral damage in the scouting department or something like that? Because they haven't done other things well as well.
Probably not.
Just the manager.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then obviously the new manager will hire coaches and stuff.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a break because we're going to be joined on the other side by NBC Sports Philadelphia at the last hour on television. So there you go. You get the 5 o'clock hour and TV. It is the Mike Mussinelli Show right here, 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.